League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, back in the friendly confines of our office here at Lambeau Field. It's been a while since we've all been together for this, guys. Did y'all miss me?
Mm-mm.
Wow. That's
so
rude.
So much, Cassidy. This is good cop, Ryan. Bad cop here. I miss you so much.
I'm glad somebody can appreciate it. I'm just going to cut that out, Spoon. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Late Thursday night here when we are recording this, you're probably listening to it Friday morning. The Packers and the NFL as a whole have wrapped up the first round of the 2023 NFL draft. The Packers, of course, had pick 13 after making a trade with the New York Jets to send Aaron Rodgers, and a lot of different picks were transferred. But for the purposes of this podcast, they swapped 15 and 13. Packers got 13, and they draft edge rusher Lucas Van Ness out of Iowa. Funnily enough, good thing I don't work in words.
Is that a word?
No.
It's late for me, too.
Funny enough.
Shakespeare made up words all the time. It's a sign of genius.
I would have believed you.
Lucas was in Wisconsin when he got the news that he would be a Packer in Fontana.
Yeah, I said Montana, Wisconsin on Twitter because it's what it sounded like to me.
I had to look it up. It's just over the line near Lake Geneva. He's from Northern Illinois, so it makes sense. Edge rusher out of Iowa, like we said. There's a lot to get into about him, but just initial reactions when you saw the pick come through that it would be edge rusher Lucas Van Ness for the Packers.
He was certainly in the mix all along. I didn't think that he was like a stretch to go there. I still thought they were going to take a Broderick Jones. I thought for sure they were going to take a tackle, mostly because there's a lot of edge rushers in this in the draft. And I thought, well, they could get somebody second round, third round, fourth round. I mean, it's a really deep class. But they saw something, probably what he brings that a lot of guys don't, is the size. To be 275 and still be able to be an edge guy, really long arms, 34-inch arms, good vertical jump. He's cut. He's a really good athlete. So you could see what they liked in him. They need edge rushers. You always need pass rushers. And I can't argue with the pick. I mean, I still think a tackle, if you really liked the guy, would have been better. But I can't argue with the pick.
I think two things. I think one, it looks like they prioritize this year's need over next year's need. And I know that Brian Gutekunst said that this was a long-term decision for them as a guy that can develop with big upside. And that's true because he's going to need to develop for sure. He's not going to come in week one and be Rashawn Gary. It's going to take time. But there's a big need at edge rusher for 2023, especially with Rashawn Gary coming back from the ACL. Might not be on the field till midway through next season. They needed to add a guy, and that leads me into the second from a draft management standpoint. To hit that need at the top of the draft, 13, it allows Brian Gutekunst to now shift his focus to the offensive skill, and they need to get a tight end on Friday. They at least that, a pass catcher of some kind. I think they need to get a tight end or a receiver. And they got 42 and 45. They've got 78, I believe, in the third round. This is a good chance for them, now that they've knocked off edge rusher, to go and, okay, let's build around Jordan Love.
He's also, as Brian Gutekunst has mentioned multiple times, very versatile, Van Ness is. He's played inside. He's played outside. He can play outside linebacker. Gutekunst was asked, you know, pretty point blank, what will he play? And it was essentially, he said essentially edge, but with the ability to go inside if needed. The edge hybrid guy is really what I feel like you need in today's NFL to kind of, you know, negate that RPO. But his spoon, to your point, his size gives him the ability. Is the versatility there? How much upside could there be there, I guess, with the versatility?
Well, I am a little leery about a 275-pound edge guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know from a quickness standpoint. I think the long arms are going to help him. But, you know, you look at the long-levered guys, like Preston Smith is probably 265 maybe. And he is sort of a hybrid guy. And I don't know. I think, as Rashawn Gary found, you can't just win on power. So he's going to have to develop some pass rush moves. And I'm interested to see. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of him on tape, how quick he is, you know, whether he can get around the edge and be an edge guy. But the one thing it sounds like is they like the idea of him being able to put his hand down and be sort mm-hmm. of like almost like an end. You know, they can probably line him up pretty wide and not have to worry about the run stopping part of it. You know, and then it can probably play him inside in the nickel too, you know, if they want to bring in another edge guy on the outside. You know, if they've got Preston Smith and Gary, and then they can probably put him inside too. So it does give them a lot of options. I'm just eager to see whether the guy can flat out rush the passer as an outside guy, you know, if he has that ability.
The thing that stood out to me in Brian Gutekunst's explanation, if you look on paper, his measurables are almost identical to Rashawn Gary. Lucas Van Ness is 6'5", 277. Rashawn Gary, 6'4", 272 when he came out. Lucas Van Ness ran a 4.58 with a 1.64 10-yard split. Rashawn Gary ran a 4.58 with a 1.63 10-yard split. So almost identical in terms of the most primary measurables. I think Rashawn Gary was a touch more athletic in terms of explosion when he came out. There just wasn't a lot of guys built like Rashawn Gary, but
Rashawn Gary's a unique guy.
He is. He always was. But so even though on paper they're similar, what Brian Gutekunst said was the film, Lucas Van Ness reminded him of Za'Darius Smith. Mm-hmm. And if you know Za'Darius Smith, he was a guy when he was with the Packers as an All-Pro that could put his hand in the ground and rush from inside in the nickel. And he could stand up on the outside and base or even a nickel. And one of the things that they were able to do is Za'Darius Smith, once Rashawn Gary developed, they had Preston Smith. They went with a lot of three outside linebacker and three edge rush pass rush packages. When Rashawn Gary comes back, that might be an option that Lucas Van Ness gives them. And that when you can rush with three true explosive edge rushers, that's cooking with gas in this league. So just the juxtaposition between measurables, Rashawn Gary, film, Za'Darius Smith is kind of what Brian Gutekunst saw.
Yeah, that was a telling quote, I thought, from Goody. He said, quote, "He's a different player than Z was, but I think he's going to be able to do a lot of the same things." Let me ask you this to just kind of sum up the versatility part of Lucas Van Ness. For better or for worse, the word hybrid would have a positive connotation. The word tweener would have a negative. What would you call Lucas Van Ness at this point in his football career?
Well, when I think of a tweener, I think of someone who's too small to play a larger position. So
like
I would
interior defensive line.
Yeah, or like a safety who has played middle linebacker, or who's too big to play safety and you want him to play middle linebacker, but he's not really big enough to play middle linebacker. That's what I think of as a tweener. I don't know you know, the only way he would be a tweener to me is if he's too slow to be a really effective outside pass rusher, and then you're like, okay, well, he's a 4-3 defensive end, and he needs to be lined up over a tackle as opposed to, you know, out wide. But it doesn't seem to be the case. They seem to think that he's going to be a, you know, that he's got quick enough feet and explosion to play outside.
While at Iowa, he only played 2 years because he came in during the COVID year, and then he's leaving as a redshirt sophomore. He just making sure he over the 2 years finished with 13.5 sacks. In 2022, he had I think about that many tackles for loss and 6 sacks. Never started a game while with the Hawkeyes. Brian Gutekunst said that's unusual, but not necessarily a concern because he played just under 1,000 snaps. Should it be a concern, or is that just kind of how college football is nowadays, or especially as both he and Van Ness said, especially at a place like Iowa?
I mean, if you look at his first year on the field, he was tied for their lead with 7 sacks. He might not have started, but he played a lot, and he was productive in those snaps, probably their best pass rusher. So, and we're talking like right out of the gate after his redshirt freshman year. So what he is a guy that they believe will develop with high upside because of his measurables and his athletic traits. He's going to need to develop a pass rush arsenal. And to Spoon's point, he can't just win with power. And his experience playing defensive line interior, Lucas Van Ness told us tonight, he feels like that makes him a good power rusher on the outside. And that's important. You want to be able to win with power on the outside, but you've got to be able to use your, you know, he said he was working on a lot of stab club moves this offseason and, you know, preparing the technique part of his job. That's going, just like Rashawn Gary, that's going to ultimately be what determines whether or not he can successfully get to the quarterback in this league or not. But he's got the athletic measurables, and he's got the raw power and the experience of production with the snaps he had to think that there's good football ahead of him.
Let me get y'all's really quick opinion on something, because I know that there's going to be a lot of fans that are rushing to watch his tape over the next day or two and look at what he might have in his toolbox. He mentioned the stab club move. One thing he didn't mention, but what I think is kind of something you need to have in your arsenal as an edge rusher, is like a swim move. What is, in your opinions, what is the most important move you should have as an edge rusher in the NFL?
Boy, I don't know. Whatever works for you best, yeah. You know? I mean, not every guy can do the
what
same thing.
What worked for you, Spoon?
Well, I'm always a big fan of the Reggie White hump move. Mm. But, it depends. It all depends. Everybody's got a different move. You just have to have more than one. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be able to read what the tackle is about to do and you know, you have to have some power too. I just think having power is really important, because if you have power, then you force the offensive tackle to respect that, because nobody wants to get bull rushed and get knocked on their butt. So, you know, it starts with that. And then, you know, if you're a speed guy, it's great, but guys like David Bakhtiari proved that you can, if you got really long arms and you're a tackle, you can just take a speed guy off the edge. He better have an ability to beat you inside with some power moves. So that's why, you know, the whole idea of like Nolan Smith, I know he's going to be probably going to be pretty good for the Eagles, because they, you know, they play their guys way outside. They practically have resurrected the Georgia defense there. But for the Packers, it's not a good fit. The Packers really expect their outside guys to play the run. They only want to rush 4 guys. And so when they do that, that means, you know, 4 guys have to play the run. And you really have to have those guys be able to take on a tackle or a tight end. And so that's, I think, why they like the size, as opposed to, they don't have like speed guys. Za'Darius Smith was a speed, but he's a power guy first. Preston Smith is kind of a combo, Sean Garrett is all power. You know, Kingsley Enagbare is a big guy. They just don't do the speed rush type guy. So Van Ness kind of fits in that.
I think what it ultimately comes down to is being able to convert speed to power. And it's your get off the line of scrimmage and then being able to convert that into a power rush. I think that's where Rashawn Gary's game really took off, was being able to convert speed to power and not just being a one-dimensional rusher. It's bend coming across, you know, around the edge, and then it's counter moves, you know, because a guy like David Bakhtiari is going to shut down your first move. Then what? You've got to have something else in your arsenal during the snap. You got to be able to improvise. You've got to be able to read and reflect blocks and come up with something else when your first move doesn't shut down. And that's where I think a lot of edge rushers take time to develop, is developing more than one move and being able to counter a pass block.
You both mentioned the power moves, and Van Ness mentioned that during his media availability with us as well, that he thinks that's a big part of his game. He benched 17 reps at the combine. Is that related or a concern?
I don't think the bench press is as critical as it used to be. It used to be a big deal in the NFL, and now half the guys don't even do it. You know, they go to the combine and they refuse to do it. And I remember, you know, I've gone to Wisconsin pro days for a long, long time, and their offensive linemen would always do like ridiculously low bench presses, and they were consistently excellent players. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about a whole litany of Wisconsin offensive linemen who played in the NFL, and I always wondered about that. And I remember the old Packers offensive line coach Tom Labatt saying they don't stress the bench press. They don't care. You know, strength is in other things. And so I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, whether that means anything, but it, you know, judging from some of the highlights I saw, I mean, I saw him knock Skoronski on his butt, mm-hmm, with a, you know, two-handed bull rush. So I assume if he can do that, then he's pretty strong.
You know what's interesting about that? You wouldn't think of Wisconsin at all being a soft program. You know, that's interesting.
No,
they wouldn't put
no.
up. I mean, that, those are some rugged dudes.
Yeah. I mean, Joe Thomas. You can just go through all kinds of guys.
I mean, Dez Texas, Wisconsin offensive linemen. Right. The only things you can depend on in this.
Yeah, and it's just was not part of their program. They didn't measure strength by the bench press. Hmm. It was all kinds of other. You know, you block with your hips and your legs, and mm-hmm, and so it wasn't something they stressed.
That's what I was thinking while you were saying that. That especially with a rusher, that there's something to be said for power being in your base too, and that doesn't necessarily translate to the bench press. Mm-hmm. You mentioned tomorrow that the Packers, or today by the time you're listening to this, Packers have picked 42, 45, and 78. Sorry, I'm trying to give them a lot more. Brian Gutekunst said after Thursday night's round, "We don't pick this high very often, so we had a lot of good choices." It feels like that might still be the case again tomorrow. And he also said, you know, that the phone didn't ring as much today as he thought it would. Do you anticipate maybe that happening tomorrow? Or where do you see the Packers going tomorrow?
I'll tell you what, if I'd known before the draft that this is how the first round would go, I had them taking Dalton Kincaid 13, I wouldn't have done that. They have only one tight end went off the board, and that was Dalton Kincaid. Now, if Dalton Kincaid turns into Travis Kelce, then, well, maybe they might regret that, but that's a huge if, right? They have a lot at their disposal when it comes to tight ends tomorrow. They've got some good receiver options still. They need to focus on the offensive skill positions now, but they've got a lot of guys on the board that could be playmakers, and if I'm Brian Gutekunst, I'm very pleased about that.
I think there could be a lot of movement tomorrow because I think there's such a variety of tight ends and edge rushers that people will be like, well, I want to make sure we get this guy or that guy. Either that or I'm completely wrong and everybody else, because there's so many tight ends and so many edge rushers, and people are like, oh, well, we'll get somebody that we like. What'll be interesting to me is if Gutekunst just stays there or if he tries to get more picks. You know, they didn't really address an offensive their offense at all, and they need to address it. I mean, they need to get, you know, 3-4 offensive players, maybe 5 out of the rest of their draft. And, you know, maybe they need to accumulate some more picks. I don't know.
They have 10 left right now.
The one place that you can look on the defense and say they definitely need this still is safety. They definitely need a safety. Branch is still available.
About to say, he's still sitting there.
I didn't like him at 13, but at 42 or 45, maybe, because they really need a safety. But short of that, it's the offense where they have needs. So you would think that they would pivot to that now.
I like that kid out of Illinois, too, and you might could get him there at 78.
I mean, I don't see how they cannot take a tight end in the second round. I mean, if they don't come out of there with a tight end, then I think they're nuts.
Yep.
I mean, there's going to be somebody there who's pretty good. Mm-hmm. But if they took a tight end and a safety, I don't think I'd have a problem with that, you know. But they do need to get a wide receiver, too. Yep. They need to keep accumulating wide receivers.
There was a run on those receivers today, too.
There was. If they can get a slot receiver in the third round, that's a decent place to go get a slot guy. I'm really curious to learn about how they value the tight end position in terms of what they value in it, because there's a lot of variety there. Mm-hmm. Darnell Washington, big six offensive lineman type, good speed, kind of has the size to develop into a solid blocker. You've got, obviously Michael Myers still out there.
Those are two completely different players.
Two totally. And you can go on down the list. Musgrave, Laporta.
Laporta's a really good athlete. Yeah. Really quick.
What do they value?
There's so many different kind of guys. Yeah.
I don't want to brag, but I was the only one in our predictions that at least got the position correct of what they would take in the first round.
We won't say where your guy went.
Okay.
Hey, my guy went
14. You
directly
won.
After the Packers.
You won. You definitely won.
I feel like I might be having some revisionist history for myself here, but I feel like I even remember thinking about Van Ness, and I want to say, I'd have to go back and listen, I want to say I mentioned him on the podcast.
I think you did, because some people referenced that on the blog, so I think you did say it, but you didn't stick to your convictions. No.
I did that at 5:30 this morning. I don't even know what I typed, if I'm being honest. If actual English words came out, I would be a success.
I could see how you'd mix up Nolan Smith and Van Ness.
I will say, every time Van Ness does something in a game this year, I'm going to use the gif from that Eddie Murphy movie where it's like, Hercules, Hercules.
Yep. It's a good nickname.
One last thing. Brian Gutekunst said that, the reason they went defense again, that, it's not intentionally done, but it's sort of just happening now. He said essentially just came down to the grades they had on Van Ness over an offensive guy. You're making a face.
Did anybody hear him say his expectations for the defense are getting pretty high?
Now.
I mean,
I feel like I've heard that
Joe
before.
Barry, did you hear that?
I feel like I've heard that every year.
How
many first-rounders are on this defense now?
But
13?
I mean, okay, Joe Barry, the ball's in your court now.
Yeah.
You go do something with it for a change.
I think it's 16 of the last 19 first-round picks have been defense. I think it's what?
Yeah. And then 7 of 8.
All but one for Brian Gutekunst. The only one that hasn't been defense is Jordan Love.
Yeah.
You should have a good defense.
It could be argued that the Packers team we will see on the field in 2023 is the first, almost top to bottom, Brian Gutekunst team, other than a few positions.
Yeah, there's still some Ted Thompson guys left, but it's starting to look more like his team. And we can talk about this after the draft is done, but Matt LaFleur's on the spot now. He brought back Joe Barry. Mm-hmm. He's no longer got Aaron Rodgers, and it's going to be his system, and everything's going to be, all on him. there's a lot of pressure on him this year.
We're about to find out whether or not he's worth his salt as a coach.
Yeah.
That's exactly the phrase I was about to use.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, let's wrap this sucker up. They, like we said, they pick at 42, 45, and 78 as of now on Friday. What do you think they do? Ready, go.
Definitely tight end. I think all right, the three picks are going to be tight end, receiver, and safety. I don't know the order. I think one of the second rounders is going to be a tight end. I don't know if the receiver goes in the second round, safety in the third, or vice versa, but I think of the three picks, that's the way it'll break out.
Spoon?
Yeah, I mean, that's the logical one, you know, which tells me, like, okay, he's going to take another edge rusher.
Right.
You know?
Kicker. Here we go. They need one.
But, you know, if I were just, you know, putting all the dots together, I would say exactly what you just said. But something different will come up.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll take another edge rusher or something like that. I don't know.
Maybe an offensive lineman. Maybe.
Yeah, like an interior guy. Like, there's no tackles left. Yeah. I mean, if he there's not any good ones. He could take an interior guy and create some competition inside, mm-hmm. you know, although, you know, he's got a lot of guys inside that he doesn't really need to add another one. But they do need a tackle.
They do.
I mean a future tackle. Yeah.
I'm feeling frisky, so I'm going to get super specific with my prediction.
All right.
I think they package two of those three picks and move up for Michael Meyer, and then they take a safety with the other one. And I think I mentioned him earlier. I don't think they're going after Brian Branch. I really like that kid from Illinois who I think could be a late day two pick.
So I was looking at this. To move up three spots from 42 would be their fourth round pick. So I think there's some maneuverability there. Without packaging the third.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, if they want to go anything more than that, they'd have to probably give the third, which every Packers fan under the sun would say, okay, fine, get rid of the third-round pick because it's going to be a bust anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it'll be interesting. And there's a lot of tight ends there, so maybe just moving up three and getting rid of a fourth-round pick will do it.
Last year,
was mentioned a lot on the Facebook Live tonight, too.
Yeah, he's the guy – And also the kid from Cincinnati, White Weil. But don't forget, last year he packaged both seconds for Christian Watson. That turned out to be a pretty good move.
Sure
so
did.
Maybe he does that and goes for somebody at the top. I don't know if it's Meyer or if it's Washington or I don't know how they view it.
All due respect to Darnell Washington, if I'm packaging both of my second-round picks to move up to the top of the second round, I want a tight end that can catch as well.
Yeah, I do too.
I wonder if they look at the bounty of tight ends that are still available and just feel like there's not one that's worth taking an aggressive move up for.
I view it that way.
Yeah.
I would sit and wait. I'd have a hard time. Mm-hmm. He'd have to really explain why he thinks this particular tight end is so much better than everybody else.
Yep.
Well, we will find out in less than 24 hours here. We will continue to have full coverage for you on PackersNews.com. Spoon will be running his live blog again through rounds 2 and 3. Ryan will have wrap-ups for you each day. We'll have a live tracker going for you as well. And then stay tuned. As I said, wall-to-wall coverage for the rest of the weekend. Thanks so much, guys. I will see y'all back here. I don't want to do the math because that's just going to make me depressed. But very soon.
We'll be
back here soon. Thanks so much, guys. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
Green 19!
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.